Go. Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is another one of our weekly Hoops HD reports coming to you live on tape delay, recording this on the evening of November 27th, a little after 9:30 p.m. on the East Coast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a whole bunch of college basketball experts. We have down below me John Titel, John Salica, off to one side, Rocco Miller, back with us again. And on the other side, the only person that's not an expert, David Griggs.
No, I am an expert. I'm an expert. Anything. And what, like, are we going to start off with Nebraska's Final Four pace? They've only lost two games. Any team in the Big Ten that finishes the season with only two losses is clearly on a Final Four pace. And it's been a big weekend. A lot happened. But I think that tops the list.
Okay, let's talk about real news as opposed to what David wants to talk about. We will talk a little Nebraska in a bit, though.
I should be hosting the show.
We want to do is go, David, don't make me mute you. We want to do is go back and go over some of the events that happened, some news and notes from the past week, as well as go through all the exempt tournaments. We had a huge week of college basketball. But actually, before we get there, I want to start with a game that was not part of one of the tournaments. It was part of the Barclays Center Classic that nobody saw because it was only on Facebook, I believe. But
I saw
Minnesota, beat Alabama 89-84, which in and of itself is not that huge. I mean, it was a good matchup of two top 25 teams. But Titel, by the end of the game, there were three players left on the floor for Alabama.
This is my early contender for individual performance of the year as Alabama freshman point guard Colin Sexton had 40 points, 6 boards, and 5 assists. He only lost by 5 points despite playing 3-on-5 for the final 10 minutes. I can't even describe, with or without the video, that a team playing a top 15 team with 3 players was able to keep it to a 5-point loss. Unbelievable.
Keep it to a 5-point loss. They outscored him at 3-5.
Real bad feedback. Okay, are we okay now?
Yeah, they outscored him 3-5, and David, not only they outscore him, but doesn't this have some type of indictment on Minnesota that you get outscored with two less players where you should be able to just 3 passes and have an open shot every time down the court?
Yes and no. I will say this. I don't. This not to make excuses, but I don't think there's really anything in the playbook for 5-on-4 and 5-on-3. I don't think Minnesota knew what to do because the situation was so bizarre. So they just did nothing and almost got burned. I think that had to have had something to do with it because is it an indictment on Minnesota? Yes, but this is the same Minnesota team that had a comfortable lead for most of the game. Not a blowout lead, but they had them at arm's length for most of the game when it was 5-on-5. This is a Minnesota team that went into Providence and won. This is a very good Minnesota team. And I attribute their struggle in 5-on-3 at least partly being to it, you know, just being such a bizarre situation. Do you think I'm way off on that or not? I mean, it was bizarre. It was really strange.
This was reminiscent of what happened last year between UAB and Louisiana Tech when you had players from both benches leaving the bench because of a fight. This was more of a shoving match, but only Alabama players left the bench and therefore got ejected. Minnesota players did not, so that's why there eventually was a 5-on-3.
Well, I just always thought when you're playing 5-on-3, the point is just ice the puck every time.
And it could have been that. What happened last year between UAB and Louisiana Tech? Louisiana Tech also outscored UAB, but I think the two coaches during the timeout just kind of agreed that the game needed to end. So neither team really played defense. They just dribbled out the shot clock and then it lay up. It was real boring. But in this case, Alabama, and don't get me wrong, what a tremendous effort by the three guys they had. It was spectacular, and it was crazy. And they actually not only kept it close, they got it close. Because when that happened, Minnesota was up double digits. It was just a ridiculous effort. a really bizarre scene. Another thing about that game, it was the only top 25 matchup of the day, but as you said, it was on Facebook Live, not really on television, and it was during the Auburn-Alabama football game. So you got to wonder, did Alabama's fans even know what was happening when it was happening? It was just a really bizarre day all the way around.
Well, I'll tell you what you're talking about. This was part of the Barclays Center Classic, and what I want to do is go ahead and bring up the page here that I believe it should be showed up on the screen right here, which comes right from our Hoops HD website. We've got our in-season tournaments, and I want to go through all these events that happened last week, or at least the major ones, talk about what did happen. And Rocco, let me bring you in here about the first, about the Maui Invitational, where I think we not only got the matchup we wanted to, but we got the game we're looking for in the championship as well.
Yeah, that was a tremendous championship game. And, you know, the whole tournament was fun to watch. I got a chance to see all the games. And I think the craziest story coming out of Maui was California having a massive lead against Wichita State for about 30 to 35 minutes until it all fell apart and they couldn't handle the pressure. I think they turned it over 9 out of 11 possessions. And then not only that, they turn around and can't hang in there with BCU and then get blown out by a red-hot Chaminade team that was excited to play their last game for 2 years. So this tournament had a lot of different storylines, but it did all come down to that championship game, and that's another game we could see in the tournament if they ended up in the same bracket, because Notre Dame-Wichita State looked like they have a lot of staying power at the top of the polls for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and Ty, I think one other storyline in the first round, at least, was LSU beating Michigan. We did not think of anything of this LSU team heading into the season. Do you think this was that there is some life here in LSU, or is Michigan just overrated?
Yes. I didn't think LSU was going to be a 500 team this year, but this freshman point guard, Tremont Waters, is scoring at will, much like tons of other SEC freshman point guards, which would be a whole separate show in the future, by the way. As far as Michigan, I think they'll be okay. I don't know that this is a 20-win tourney team, especially if you're losing LSU. But they're competitive. They beat Chaminade, which not everybody can do, apparently. And they beat a VCU team, which was a very solid A-10 team. So I think Michigan will be okay. I don't think that they're going to make a deep run or anything, but I think they're serviceable.
Well, Salika, the Cayman Islands Classic last week, won by Cincinnati there, and which kind of just dominated through this field. Was there anything else? I guess the other thing you had to take out of this is what Iowa did in being pretty pathetic in the event.
I think it's a matter of what they didn't do in the first two games. That's if you're able to find the games, because this was part of the flowhoops.com package, and I think if you were looking for a particular school, like let's say Cincinnati, you were probably paying 10 or 15 bucks a time.
I paid 15 bucks for the whole package, like everything Flow Hoops had. So, I mean, it was all 3 or 4 tournaments and then some. I don't know. Anybody that did that is an idiot. I'm sure a lot of people did it. Anyway.
Okay, Rocco, the Legends Classic. We saw Texas A&M. Steamroll a couple of teams, more or less. It looked really good in the process.
Yeah, Texas A&M looked great last week, which I kind of expected after what we saw against West Virginia, and they showed that wasn't necessarily a fluke. But the team actually that stood out most to me was it really interested to see how Penn State would do. Obviously, I think we all figured they would take care of Pitt, but I love the way that they hung in there with A&M. I know the final score was they lost by 11, but they were going pound for pound with them, possession for possession with them pretty much throughout the entire game. And just if you go off the eye test, which is all we can do with Penn State so far, they look to me like a tournament team, which, you know, I had to get somebody out of my bracket to get them in. But I'm excited to watch this team in some big games coming up this week, actually.
And if we're talking about A&M, they followed that up, David, with a real impressive performance on the road at USC last night.
Yeah, when it comes to profiles so far, I mean, A&M has put together enough already. They've put together as much, if not more, than what some teams that get in under the bubble do. They've won 4 games away from home, including a win at USC, who's ranked, and a win on a neutral floor against West Virginia, who's ranked. That's pretty damn good. They hold serve the rest of the way. You got to figure they've already kind of made a strong case for themselves. And this is a really good A&M team. They didn't just beat USC. They ran away from them. And they blasted West Virginia after trailing early. They're just really, really good. I think them in Florida, I know Kentucky has – it's basically been Kentucky and friends, the SEC, but not this year. There are two other really good teams along with Kentucky and Florida and A&M. I know we're going to get to Florida here in a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will. I guess, Tytel, the MGM Resorts main event, not exactly a great field, but you and UNLV, I know, is playing in their home city, but are you starting to take a little notice of this Vegas team after winning this event?
Somewhat more so, the freshman superstar Brandon McCoy. I still can't believe this stat, but he out-rebounded the entire starting five of the Utes by himself, and not by a little bit, 17-10, out-rebounded the entire starting five of the other team.
That is pretty ridiculous. David, the CBE Hall of Fame player. Here, or I'm sorry, Rocco, you had a comment on this game with Baylor with a couple of nice wins in this event.
Yeah, no, I do. I was just going to touch on Tytel. UNLV's been a dominant team, but they also this week will be really interesting to watch as they go to Northern Iowa Wednesday and Saturday. They come back to Vegas to play Arizona, who anyway, I know we're getting into the schedules later in the show. I just wanted to touch on that. UNLV holds up this week. But yeah, Baylor, so the interesting thing about four of these games that took place in Kansas City was they were all close. I think in every game, I might be mistaken, every team had a lead and a sizable, decent chance to win in all four games. But Baylor was just the team that had the most resilience. I think in the championship game, Creighton led most of the way. Baylor, I think actually Scott Drew out-coached McDermott in that game, making a lot of different strategic substitutions, switching up his defense. So Baylor impressed me there, but they've been known to have really good non-conference schedules and then come Big 12 play fall apart. So kudos to Baylor for winning this. It was up for grabs.
David, another event that's on the screen right there, the Cancun Challenge. I don't even know if it's really worth mentioning or not. This was the main bracket from the Cancun Challenge. Pretty weak field. Louisiana Tech gets a couple wins.
Yeah.
Anything at all? Or is this event just kind of dying at this point?
It is kind of dying, although La Tech is one of a smattering of teams that we're going to talk about, I'm sure, on Wednesday. Not so much on the radar, but – well, let me ask you this. Does CUSA have enough between them – and Old Dominion and, well, UAB kind of crashed into a mountain, but Middle Tennessee, do the three of those have enough to push one of them inside the bubble if one of them runs away with the league? A real quick opinion, just I know it's too early and no one can really say, but is it developing into something to where one of these teams could land inside the bubble?
I would just say Western Kentucky has the best
chance. Western Kentucky, another one. Thank you.
I think they have the best chances because now they got a Purdue victory and they've got a SMU victory. So if those two teams go on and have the seasons that we thought they would have during the preseason, then WKU, as long as they don't pick up horrible losses, has a shot.
Well, we just mentioned WKU, which is a nice segue over to the Battle for Atlantis, which, Tytel, I know you don't want to discuss it, but I think I got to go.
Let's discuss it.
Or do you want to just – or have you taken away this eighth-place finish from your mind here?
I'm just glad we got to see that Arizona-Purdue game we all wanted to see.
I'm just glad this week is over. As an Arizona fan, imagine the scenario. So your team goes 0-3 in the Bahamas. Your in-state rival not only goes for the sweep in Vegas and then comes down on the weekend and beats you in the annual in-state rivalry football game, PS, and then somehow fires their coach. It's just – I could not wait for that last week to end. It was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Arizona, it was horrible. Well, look at it this way. I mean, Arizona was the second-best team in the country. They didn't lose these games in the country, so maybe they don't count.
Well, I mean, David, if you looked to go to this event, if I told you to go to this event that both Western Kentucky and Northern Iowa would pick up two wins, you probably would have had me committed.
Yeah, and two nice wins, too. Northern Iowa and Western Kentucky, a couple of breakout teams under the radar. Just putting together really nice early profiles here, and they're going to have a couple more chances. And are they good at – I mean, was it a fluke? Did they just kind of have a good weekend, or are these legitimate top 40 bubble-ish teams? So far, those are two really good wins away from home. And if you watch that game against Villanova, I know what the final score was, but you and I was right in there for a good portion of the game. I mean, it wasn't really until after the under four that Villanova could kind of exhale. They were right in there. They're not as good as Villanova, but they played a lot better against Villanova than what you'll see a lot of teams do this year. I was really impressed with both these teams, but especially Northern Iowa, because I guess I wasn't expecting that as much from them as WKU, who we weren't really sure about.
Sleek, you had a comment on the event also?
Well, there was another team that won two games that we didn't see coming, and that was Tennessee. I mean, they get nice wins against Purdue and NC State. And apparently their fans were irate this weekend that they lost to Villanova.
Oh, I would know. Did you see that? Wow. People in Tennessee just really.
That's obviously what they were upset about. But
yeah.
All seriousness, though, I was very impressed with this Tennessee team. And I thought they were still a year or two away, but maybe Rick Barnes is ready to make a run this year.
I mean, they're a solid team in a very difficult conference, and so we'll see with upcoming games in December. Georgia Tech, North Carolina, and Wake Forest, apparently because they joined the ACC and didn't tell anybody about it. Grant Williams could end up being all SEC. The rest of the team is good and young. The only senior of note, James Daniel, that transfer from Howard, has done nothing so far. So next year I think they might make the leap. This year they're just going to slowly get better and better.
Yeah. Yeah, and then one other note on the tournament, NC State, Braxton Beverly, a guy that was mentioned a lot in previous shows, ended up scoring 20 points in the upset over Arizona and then played 34 minutes in the second game. And by the third game, he was a starter. So he went from a guy we were just thinking of being a decent role player to now being a really big impact player for NC State. So something to watch.
Over in the Advocare, Rocco, let me stick with you for this event here, the Advocare Invitational. I was completely shocked by the way Missouri played in this event. They not only made the championship game, they had a significant lead on West Virginia that they blew late in that championship game. All of this without Michael Porter, who's gone for the season.
Right, yeah. And you know, they're showing that they still have a strong team. I've been really high on you know, his brother Jonte can really play, and I know he had a big finish. I think he hit a bunch of threes to beat St. John's. But they also have Per Year down low, who's playing well, and they've got the Canisius transfer, Cassius Robertson, who can really play efficient basketball. He's not turning it over. So, you know, they're just they melted down against Press Virginia. They probably should have won the tournament if they were prepared better for that. But kudos for West Virginia for coming over the top to beat them. And I'll just say from the Pac-12 perspective, more disappointment here with Oregon State losing twice when they had high hopes to get to the final.
Yeah, West Virginia, that pressure defense that Rocco referred to, it was – that had a lot to do with it, but it's just like, my God, how many times in a row is Mizzou going to turn the ball over? Watching that down the stretch,
it was like Cal Wichita State with almost the same formula.
Right? Yeah.
I tell you, it kind of made me wonder if you know you are playing three games in 4 days with that type of high tempo defense and high tempo game. Maybe you know they kind of backed off a little bit just out of fatigue here, and that's why maybe Missouri was so competitive early in the game, and when finally it came to crunch time and West Virginia turned it on, they just blew them out. And
yeah. Because, I mean, they came roaring back. And you want to see Mizzou do a better job taking care of the ball. So they needed to do that. But also, it just goes to show you just how strong West Virginia's defense is. And another team in this tournament, equally as impressive, won just as many games as Mizzou off on their Final Four pace here, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. We have to cover that. They were 2-1 in this event.
Ty Tell, I want to go back to Missouri very quickly. Porter, as you correctly just noted to me in a quick note here, is maybe out for the rest of the season. He might be back, as I understand it.
Yeah, just to clarify, I mean, I think you're right, but I don't think it's a done deal that he's definitely gone. And the fact that they can win games without him, it's one thing if he comes back in late February when they're like 5-20, but this right. team looks like they could be a 500 team without him. I wouldn't want to face him in the SEC tourney if he's healthy.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he does not come back, the real news is that he will qualify for a medical registration and have 4 years of eligibility remaining.
Yes. Yeah, the rules on that, a medical redshirt, you are kind of breaking up there, but he would be eligible for that, so he would get 4 years. The reason is he had not played a sixth of the season, and he suffered a season-ending injury. He is eligible for a medical redshirt. Very good point, Chad.
Eligible. Let's head back to the Pac-12. Tytel, in the Pac-12, at least they did something good out of a team that nobody expected to do anything good, and that was Washington State taking the Wooden Legacy.
If you had told me there was going to be a Pac-12 team undefeated in late November and had given me several guesses, would I have ever guessed this? Absolutely not. Kudos to Ernie Kent. I really thought that his career was going to be over last year. He opened up with 3 cupcakes, then beat St. Joe, St. Mary, San Diego State back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah.
A nice set of cupcakes coming up, and then a big game against Kansas State on December 20th in Spokane. If they win that, I don't know if they're going to be undefeated entering Pac-12 play in late December, but the fact that it's even possible, very strong contender for Pac-12 Coach of the Year, I think.
What was more surprising, and they were both very surprising, this or Arizona State? This is the biggest shocker of the year to me. The fact that they even beat NIT caliber teams, much less St. Mary's, and looked good doing it. I mean, you watch these games and they played well.
David, you're right. I can't agree more. I think it just shows how low Washington State's expectations were coming into the year. I think in this tournament they caught a ton of breaks, which is great news for them. But the fact that they were even competitive is a big statement. The St. Joe's game, they were down by 20 against a team that had 2 major injuries, and they were able to come back and do that. That was the second time this year they came back from down 20. They did that against Texas Southern. I think we talked about that on the previous episode. And then they come in and they play a St. Mary's team that's very lethargic, can't explain them. And they take advantage of it and get the win. And then in the championship game, I'm blanking on his name, but the big man for San Diego State gets injured in the first half, and they take advantage of that and they win the whole thing. So it's unbelievable.
Malik Pope, I believe.
Yeah, Pope. That's right. Yeah, Malik Pope.
I'm reading Tytel's comments on Coach.
sometimes you get a little lucky than good, but they're playing with poise and winning these close games. So that says something.
Stalika, the other big story, I think, out of the Wooden Legacy was the complete, you know, St. Mary's. This was their one chance to get notable win or wins, and, you know, they only get a win over Harvard. They lose to Washington State. They lose to Georgia. You know, this is a team that may have trouble getting a tournament bid at this point, even, let alone a top seed.
Well, we already knew their opportunities were going to be limited, and there really weren't any big names coming into the tournament. So losing to middling teams like Georgia and who was the other one, Washington State, that's not going to help make their case. But I was also going to throw in another historical footnote as it relates to the Wooden Legacy. The Pac-10 / Pac-12 all-time is a perfect 15-0 with 5 champions.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Conference of champions.
That's right.
It was Wazoo's manifest destiny.
David, the NIT season tip-off, our colleague Joby couldn't be with us tonight. I know he wanted to talk about Virginia, but they were pretty impressive in this event.
Yeah, they were. You know, beat 2 pretty good teams. Well, at least 1.5 really good teams. I don't know about Vanderbilt, but I think we were all expecting it to be Virginia Seton Hall, but they beat a pretty good Rhode Island team rather than convincingly. They're at home against Wisconsin right now. They are once again surpassing their preseason expectations, and I think Tony Bennett might be pretty good. He may be.
Yeah, Chad, I was
yeah, just Rocco.
Yeah, on Virginia, one thing that's really impressed me is I actually went back and watched some of the highlights from the weekend with both their games. So they had established scores already with Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome. And what Rhode Island's game plan was in the championship game was to take those guys out of the game. And then they turned it over to Isaiah Wilkins and Devin Hall. And those guys go off for 19 and 18. So Virginia is still playing their fundamental defense under Tony Bennett like they always do. And now they've got up to four scoring options. And this makes this team a real dangerous team on both sides of the ball. So they skyrocketed up my rankings.
Right. I think the other thing of note is it did surprise me that Seton Hall lost that game to Rhode Island. Really disappointing loss, though, Rocco, especially
Rhode Island. Rhodey needed that one so bad. I mean, I know we might get to the 8-10 in a little bit, but that was a big, much-needed win for Rhodey. That might be their signature win of the year, potentially.
Yeah, especially without EC Matthews. I mean, if the committee discusses that, you know, who knows if they will. But without EC Matthews to beat Seton Hall, that's a big time win for Rhode Island. They should be happy leaving that tournament.
Oh yeah,
and you see there, we should see on the screen some of the 2018 fields that are coming up in Titel. For example, we see next year Kansas, Louisville, Marquette, Tennessee as in the season tip off.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
There's one that's coming up in a bit here for next year's field that's maybe even better than that. I'll get to that in a minute, though. But Titel, let me stick with you on the – we've just got to the Field Night Invitational. It's the two brackets of it. The victory bracket won by Michigan State in a snoozer over North Carolina last night.
Yeah, Tar Heel offense failed to show up, unfortunately. Kudos to Tom Izzo because he's been owned by Roy Williams for the past decade plus, so it was great to see them come out ahead. I predicted all offseason this was going to be one of the best tournaments ever and akin to the best tournament site you've ever seen. And I really think it lived up to the expectations. A lot of blowouts, and like, I can't say that I was stayed up late to watch like the Oklahoma-Portland game or anything, but both brackets were great and the overtime games were great and the freshmen played great. I hope everybody enjoyed this tournament as much as I did.
Oh, it was great. I think Phil Knight should turn 80 every year. Will there ever be my insiders, which are you guys, will they ever stage something like this again? Like, I mean, I know that like you couldn't call it the Phil Knight 80, but maybe the Nike Portland Classic or something, because God, what a great event. And more importantly, just whenever you have basketball of that caliber in that environment, at this time of the year, I think it is so good for the sport. You kind of wish that the games weren't on in the middle of the night because most of the East Coast may have been asleep, but we've already had four top 10 matchups 3 weeks into the year, and two of them were staged in this tournament.
Well, you're just focusing on Nike right here. I mean, let's not forget you also have Cleeks and Adidas and Under Armour who have also made strides in recent years.
Yeah, we may actually get an Adidas tournament next year. We could call it the FBI Invitational, though.
Yes. Yes.
Perfect.
I got the motion bracket on the screen now also here, Rocco. We had a lot better championship game there with that Duke-Florida game and a real entertaining third-place game between Gonzaga and Texas, too.
Yeah. And Duke, in all three games, even the Portland State game, had to come back and win. So they showed a lot of resiliency for a team that's got a lot of youth. Marvin Bagley was, I mean, look at his statistics over the tournament. It was pretty clear to anybody who doesn't know about him or haven't had a chance to see him how dominant he is as even a young kid. So I think he's a shoe-in for the number one pick based on that. Florida was very impressive. I thought, actually, after going into the last day, I picked Florida in my head to beat Duke, and I was impressed that Duke won. So. And then in the third place game, you know, Gonzaga tried to blow it a couple times, but they were able to hold on. So Texas had two heartbreaking losses there, but they're showing that they're tournament caliber with those two losses.
Yeah. If you missed that game, Gonzaga had a 5-point lead at the end of regulation with about 4 seconds left. Gave up a two. immediately turned the ball over and gave up the three to tie it and sent it to overtime. It was a classic AKA Wake Forest type of last second choke there, David.
Yeah, it was. I heard it was something like I had turned the game off for a few minutes because I thought Gonzaga had it wrapped up, and then I turned it on and it was an overtime. I had to back it up just to see what happened. Wow. It was something. Something else that I missed.
And Stalika, Stanford continues the Pac-12 outside of the wooden legacy collapse with an eighth place finish in this event.
I think they said that was, I think, the seventh time in, Portland State's history that they had beaten a Pac-12 team. So you got to congratulate the Vikings on that because they also looked decent at times against Duke and Butler and actually gave the Bulldogs a bit of a scare, but were unable to win their consolation semifinal game.
Yeah, they had a shot at the buzzer to either tie or win it, and they led Duke for most of the first half. So nice showing by Portland State. When they get if they ended up getting that Big Sky auto bid, they might be dangerous in the NCAA tournament. I've liked them more than any other Big Sky team so far, under the radar.
David, I got here the Las Vegas Invitational up on the screen. I believe this might be the last one we're discussing today. Xavier with a win over GW and then a surprising loss to Arizona State, I thought, in the title game.
Well, it was surprising to me, kind of not so much that they lost, although I was definitely expecting them to win, but just kind of how they lost. They had, I want to say, at the under four timeout in the first half, a 13-point lead. And then there was a point in the second half where they trailed by 20-plus. So for about a 30-minute stretch, or I'm sorry, for about like a 20-25-minute stretch, Arizona State just absolutely blew them off the floor. I think they closed it up to 15 or 16. Oh, there's the score on the screen, 102-86. But, I mean, Arizona State just blew this wide open after being down double digits late in the first half. I was really, really, really impressed by the Sun Devils. Now, I don't know if they're going to come out and play like that for every game, but along with Wazoo, who in the Pac-10s looked better? Nobody. Like Xavier, an Elite Eight team a year ago, a potential protected seed, I think we were all projecting them there, and on a neutral floor, Arizona State just blew them off of it. Sorry, John.
Yeah, I was just going to tell, we were talking about upcoming fields for next year. It's not even on the screen yet. Just believe got announced yesterday or so. But next year's Las Vegas Invitational, here's your four teams: North Carolina, Michigan State, Texas, and UCLA.
How the hell did they get those? But it's also like just half of the PK80 if you look at it. I mean, besides UCLA, it's a great field.
Yeah. That is just an amazing field for next year for an event that David really has not been a feature event like that in the past.
No, not like that. I mean, they might get one or two ranked teams or showcase teams, but not like that. Like those are purebreds right there.
That sounds like the kind of event that should probably be moved from Orleans Arena to T-Mobile Arena, just based on the expected crowd you might get for a foursome like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
North Carolina's been in it before, and they lost to Vegas at the Orleans Arena. It was quite a scene.
One more event here, Titel, the Emerald Coast Classic won by TCU over, I guess you have St. Bonaventure, Maryland, to a couple of half-decent teams, I guess, in this event.
Half-decent. I think TCU has shown that they are somewhat for real, if that's not even a thing. I believe they're still one of the few undefeated teams in the Big 12. They have a very interesting schedule coming up. They really are not Cupcake City. They're doing Belmont, Yale, SMU, and Nevada. I'm not putting all four of those teams in the tournament right now, but they could be. Granted, the first three are at home, and the Nevada one's at Staples Center, but very nice scheduling by Jamie Dixon.
Yeah, I agree.
And that does cover all the events, so I wanted to go ahead and pull that down. Just a couple of notes here outside of these events. We already talked about the A&M win over USC, but Rocco, Nevada had a pretty nice week with a win out in Hawaii as well as a win over Davidson and just missed the top 25 this week.
Yeah, and I'm surprised Nevada's not in the top 25. I just feel like the voters are probably focused on winning tournaments. Yeah, sleeping. But if you watch this Nevada team, you know, one thing that's really interesting about Nevada is you look at their roster, and I think they start, they're starting 5 or 6-7, 6-7, 6-7, 6-6, and 6-8. Then they bring three guys off the bench that are 6-7, 6-7, 6-8. It's the way that Eric Musselman built his roster is unprecedented. He's got all guys that can, that are basically the same size that can play every position. And it's giving all these teams that play a lot of matchup problems. And it's going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds. But this team's a dangerous team, could definitely be Sweet 16 and beyond.
I concur. I've been highly impressed with them. And it's not easy to win in Hawaii. And I realize they don't play in a Power 5 conference, but outside of the Diamond Head, or maybe including the Diamond Head, I'd put the over-under for total number of home losses at 2. It is hard to win out there, and they might not lose again out there. So a real nice win for Nevada going out there and getting that one.
Yeah. Tytel, we had a little news tonight for, out of Marquette. Our colleague Matt, who is a Marquette alum, could not be with us, but one of their top players, Cheatham, has left not only the team but left the school, and as a result of which they just needed overtime to be Eastern Illinois at home tonight as we record this.
It is. He's a big loss. I mean, they have plenty of solid guys with Rousey and Howard and Hauser, so I don't think that he's necessarily going to ruin their thing, although he was the starting small forward. When you look at their schedule, eking out a win at home over Eastern Illinois seems pretty below average. Their two losses, a couple of schools named Purdue and Wichita State. Nice little schedule they got there.
Yeah.
One other piece of news, Stalika. Big news out of Wake Forest this week, where Danny Manning got a 6-year contract extension.
I mean, would he have gotten a lifetime? Would he have gotten a lifetime contract had they managed to win the games that they were expected to at the beginning of the year?
I mean, could you imagine had they beaten Liberty? He may have gotten a 12-year contract.
I really cannot understand how a guy goes out there 5 games of the season where he lost where he lost 3 bye games and gets a contract extension.
I mean, right, the timing of it's bizarre. Now, Danny Manning, to be fair to him, has done a superb job since taking over at Wake Forest, not doing so well this year, but that's just it. It wasn't after they made the tournament last year. It was after they lost 3 bye games that they extend him 6 years. Nice going. Funny optics on that one.
They should have saved
really, like, it's just a timing thing, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Let's go ahead. I'm going to pull this another screen up here, and I'm going to bring up this upcoming week's schedule. And why don't we start with the ACC Big Ten Challenge, which is going on as we record this. Virginia's currently up 10 on Wisconsin, but we already saw Syracuse with a home win over Maryland by 2. Tytel, you ready to buy into Syracuse now with this win today?
A 6-0 team. I mean, all 6 are at home, which is always the caveat when you talk about the Orange in November. But solid wins over Iona, Maryland, Oakland, who we've talked about a lot. They beat Oakland by 24.
Yes.
We will find out exactly how good they are on Saturday as they travel to Miami to face a little team called Kansas. So if they can play well in that, then I think they're legit. And if they get blown out, then obviously they're not.
Yeah, and David, look at some of these upcoming games here coming up Tuesday night. The highlight game, obviously, is that Louisville-Purdue game.
Yeah, and kind of a sense of urgency here for Purdue, not so much for their profile, although that too, but just for their mental health. Now, I know that they did get one win down in the battle for Atlantis, but still an overall disappointing showing. If they can beat a ranked team at home in front of their old fans, it might get their motors started back up again and get their momentum back. So I think that's a big game for them. And Louisville has also had kind of a bit of a disappointing offseason. They've eaten some cupcakes at home. It could be a nice win for them. Not so much again for the resume, because in the end, I think both these teams will be there, although maybe not Louisville, but I think it's an important early season game for both teams just based on where they are.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and throw the puppet a bone because we know what Wednesday's main event is going to be.
Yeah. What are you going to say, Rocco? Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, going back to Purdue, I mean, they have a crazy stretch. So they just got done with those 3 games. And fortunately for them, they pulled out a win at the end over Arizona. But this week, as we mentioned, they got the Louisville game tomorrow, which is crucial. But then Big Ten opens Friday, Sunday for them, which is also part of this week. and they're going to go to Maryland to open it up. That's obviously a tough place to get a W. And then they come home for Northwestern Sunday without much time to recover. Also, a big rule change, I think, this year that I don't know if we've talked about is there's a mandate now where they have to give the kids at least one off day. And yeah. I think that resulted last week in Coach K having to do a practice on the same day as the game. And that's why they came out flat against Southern University. So anyway, that's something that Purdue's going to have to juggle with their coaching staff. They've got an uphill battle, possible more losses this week. So they really need to show up this week.
Right. Tytel, the Wednesday games, probably not the matchups that ESPN really wanted when they scheduled these with the two prime ACC candidates there getting
North Carolina game. Football game there. We got Indiana, Ohio State Clemson.
And maybe it's that Miami-Minnesota game that's the best game of the day there.
You can lose the maybe. That is going to be the best game of the day, maybe of the week. A couple of top 20 teams. Miami has a very favorable schedule after that. So if they beat Minnesota, albeit on the road, I think they're going to run the table in December and enter ACC play against a horrible Pitt team in late December, December 30th, undefeated, and enter the new year undefeated. I think this will be a top 10 team. I wish I was going to go see them in person at GW on December 16th, but due to the lack of response to my credential request, I will probably be going to the Syracuse-Georgetown game instead.
Well, Stalika, I don't necessarily agree with what Tytel just said about that being the game of the week. I think that's Thursday's games. You have two of the top five teams in the nation here, Notre Dame and Michigan State. I think this could be an incredible game.
Yeah, both teams are actually going to be coming off of exempt tournament wins that we had just talked about earlier. Notre Dame may be a little more of a surprise getting by a Wichita State team that was expected to actually win Maui, but Michigan State also did themselves a favor by beating Carolina after losing to Duke a week earlier.
Rocco, do you have a pick of who's going to win the event between the two conferences, with especially with the ACC looking poised to take a 2-0 lead today?
Yeah, I'll go with the ACC without doing a huge deep dive on that. But ACC in general has got a stronger conference, in my opinion. And I think I think some of these games, they didn't do a very good job this year matching the teams up. Too many mismatches. Yeah. I think Miami-Minnesota is a good one. I think Duke-Indiana is dangerous just because Duke might be exhausted, but Indiana's still not ready for a win like that. So I think outside of Notre Dame-Michigan State, Purdue-Louisville, and Miami-Minnesota, they're all kind of mismatches. Penn State-NC State's a nice bubble-ish game that I'm interested in, but yeah.
No, I think the ACC did a superb job of scheduling here. Note that the Pitt Panthers are not listed this year.
Yeah, Pitt is not in the event. Northwestern at Georgia Tech, another game that I think is, you know, Northwestern really needs that to get their season rolling as well. One we're watching tomorrow night. Another challenge coming up this week, David, real quickly, the Mountain West Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. Not quite the ACC Big Ten level, though.
No, I'm trying to see here. There are a couple of interesting storylines here. Valpo undefeated, maybe untested. Boise State's look good, at least, okay, I mean, in some of their wins. So maybe some fringe bubble teams there. There is one game on here, and that's this Vegas-Northern Iowa game that I think is the showcase of the whole thing. So, if there's a game with serious tournament implications out of this, I think it's that one. I've liked Wyoming, although they looked awful against Cincinnati. Other than that, I'm kind of sold on them as being at least a team worth paying attention to. But I don't know. As badly as the Big Ten and the ACC teams are matched up, why not? This one's good, too.
Yeah. With Nevada or San Diego State, you better get that Facebook account active if you want to see those games. Those are two more of those Facebook Live games, which seems to be the new trend this year.
Yeah, Chad, one game I wanted to point out is Loyola Chicago is bringing an undefeated record to Boise State. So it'll be really interesting to see them play against a legit team on the road.
Well, here's the rest of the games of note that are not part of either of those events. And Sleeka, let me start with you for Tuesday night. Your Xavier team hosting Baylor here. They need this game after their loss to Arizona State?
Well, they best get off the mat right away, because we saw what happened last year during many of their losses where they were giving up threes like Halloween candy, and Arizona State certainly took advantage. I don't think Baylor is going to have quite the number of shooters, but they certainly have enough size down low that can give the Musketeers problems. But Scott Drew is actually 3-0 against Xavier in his career.
Tytel, you've got Wednesday, your Penn Quakers at Villanova in Big Five action.
Get out your Fox Sports 2 account, because that's where you're going to be able to watch that one. I was thinking of going out to a bar to watch it, but I think it's just going to be ugly. Although, I must confess, if you had a chance this weekend to catch the game of the weekend, of course, Penn's 4 overtime victory on the road at Monmouth, going into Jersey and showing them how it's done. Amazing effort.
David, come up Thursday night, a real interesting Seton Hall Texas Tech game.
Yeah, Texas Tech, Seton Hall, we were expecting to be good. Texas Tech, a little bit better than expected. In fact, they've been kind of a surprise. So this is kind of a fun matchup here between the two of them.
And then Rocco, coming up Friday, you've got this start of those Big Ten plays with the Big Ten tournament being a week earlier this year. Everyone's going to play two games here in early December, as well as Boise State having to go to Oregon and Creighton at Gonzaga at a real interesting one.
Yeah. Boise State's got a fun week this week with Loyola Chicago and then going to Oregon. And then, Creighton Gonzaga, we'll see how Creighton responds after that tough championship loss to Baylor in the Hall of Fame Classic. And I'm interested to see if Illinois, they haven't played anybody, but they're undefeated, if they can get a tough almost road win in Allstate Arena on Friday.
And David, Saturday being we got to see a couple of really big rivalries, such as the Colorado-Colorado State game, the Providence-Rhode Island game, and I don't know, there must be something else there at the top of the list that interests Stalika, but
on Saturday, a couple of decent games. Yeah, kind of a border war we got going on there at noon on Saturday. Xavier taking on this team that's Northern Kentucky right across the river. Both teams ranked in the top 25, I think, for the second year in a row. I don't know. Go to Stalika on this one. I'm anxious to hear his take. This is his.
Well, will this be the battle for the Big Mac Bridge this year?
I think so, yeah.
Tytel, the rest of these games on Saturday, there's a lot of them, such as Wichita State Baylor, the Kansas Syracuse game we mentioned earlier. Is there one or two that you're really looking forward to?
I can't say I'm looking forward to Arizona UNLV, but as Rocco said, Arizona needs a win in the worst way, and they have to do it against a big man. Luckily, in Brandon McCoy, thank God they have their own big man in DeAndre Ayton. If you like seeing future lottery picks going up against each other, that is going to be the game to watch.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah,
Providence, and, really.
Rocco, we've got a few of the big games circled here. Also, a game that may be kind of sneaking under the radar here. It was down at the bottom there at 10 o'clock, the USC-SMU game.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they're playing so late out in Dallas, but maybe just for TV purposes. But that will be a good one to check out. USC kind of just got their pride hurt by losing at home by 16 last night to A&M. SMU, they had an up-and-down Bahamas tournament, getting that big win over Arizona, but then losing to both of the mid-majors, WKU and UNI. So we'll kind of figure out – we'll learn a little bit more about each team that night.
And then you also see the Sunday's games on there as well, notably that Seton Hall Louisville game. So, David, we got a good test this week for the Seton Hall with both Texas Tech and Louisville.
Yeah, real big test, especially, and kind of decent test for Louisville too, after devouring those cupcakes with, going to Purdue and then playing Seton Hall. Kevin Willard, former associate head coach at Louisville, so under the guy that's not there anymore.
Under the guy that's not there. All right. Well, let's go ahead and actually, David, we want to do something else. One more thing here before we go to all of our final thoughts.
Very important.
You and I have been having a lot of discussions here about some of these problems that we've been seeing in college basketball.
Yeah, yes, huge problems. And we've been seeing them for years, and nobody's done anything about it. And we just thought we needed to do something about it. So What are these? So these are the 10. Yes.
We have created the 10 commandments of college basketball. We are announcing them now. We're going to put them up on the website.
Right. And this is common sense. It's like no basketball fan will see any of these and be like, oh, that's ridiculous. No, all of these are absolutely necessary.
The very first one reads that the home teams shall wear light uniforms. Thy road teams shall wear dark.
Yes. Now, you turn on the TV, you can't tell who's at home.
I hate to break this to you, Chad, but I can tell you Xavier is already going to be violating the first commandment tomorrow night with a dark gray at home.
That's ridiculous. It's urinating on, I wish I still had this picture, on James Naismith's grave.
Number two, thou shalt not look at instant replay for longer than thou can count us to 30. This means you have 30 seconds. Otherwise, it is not indisputable. It should not be overturned.
Right.
Rob, how annoying is that when you have 5 minutes of instant replay reviews?
Yeah, I mean, it takes us 2 seconds as viewers to really figure out where the call should go. I don't know why they have to confirm so many people to come back out and make a call, especially in basketball. Yeah.
Right, and it's more disruptive to the game than a bad call would be. And if the standard is indisputable, if you go and review it, and after 30 seconds or even 60, but we'll go with 30, you still don't know, then by definition there is a dispute, and the original call stands, and you get on with the game. And no going to the bench either. No, like, timeout for 5 minutes.
And no going to the third official because the first two can't agree. If the first two can't agree, it's not indisputable. It's over.
Yes, there's a dispute because they both don't agree. That's it.
Number three, cartoon characters, paint by number sets, and colorful designs shall not disgrace thy playing courts. Tytel, I don't know if you saw Florida International's court today on CBS. That was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life, though.
It was a bit distracting. I forget. Do we know who started the trend? Because I assume there was one school. I assume it's Oregon, because I always assume they start every trend. They did this to the court, and then everybody followed suit.
Yeah, Oregon was the first big one to do it with that.
Bakersfield. And
compared to some of the others out there.
Oh, my God. Like, just, you know how in soccer all the fields are the same? That's what basketball should look like. Just, you know, plain, not busy. I guess if you want to paint the floor, the lane and whatnot with your school colors, that's okay. But the best floor is just no floor at all, just a simple, basic outline.
Well, the thing is, it's also become a thing in college football thanks to Boise State and the Smurf Turf and whatever the hell Eastern Washington is calling their red field.
The Inferno. It's the Inferno. My nephew goes there. Shout out to him.
Yeah.
The FIU court, you can't even see on the far side of the court where the three-point line is. And that's not going to help with number two when you look at instant replays. Was it a three or not? We can't tell. He was standing in the water.
What a ridiculous court.
Number four, this goes back a couple of years, but thy game shall not be played on the mighty ships of the seas. And all these other – they belong in arenas, David. That's where these
– Yeah, in arenas or domes or whatever. But, yeah, basketball on boats just doesn't work.
And number five here, Salika, thou shalt not engage in a contest against a foe of a lower division more than once per year. I'll give you one non-D1 game, not 2, 3, and 4.
Yep, I think we're going to have to probably say this more towards teams out west who probably do have some legitimate scheduling conflicts because – of a lack of teams in the area. But I've said this before and under the radar, when teams like Northern Illinois in the past are maxing out to 4 games, we have a problem.
Yeah, or Stephen F. Austin. Gee, yeah, if only there were more Division I teams in Texas.
And in homage to the great Monty Python, there is no commandment number 6. Number 7, thy scores and time shall always be upon the screen with thy home team to the bottom or the right only. You turn on a lot of times with these streams, especially the home team is on the left, they're listed up at the top left corner, the road team is at the bottom right corner, the score isn't even on the screen. Let's keep it plain, simple. I turn on the game, the first thing I want to know is what's the score, not some crazy graphics like ESPN likes to show until it's a minute after the commercial before they put the score on.
Yeah, an egregious violator of this commandment is Conference USA, but they're by no means the only ones.
Coming in, here we go, number eight. Thou shalt play a minimum of, I should say, of one game per season against thy natural historical rivals. This is the Kansas-Missouri law, David. For your
Yeah, it is. And they should play each other at least once a year, or Wichita State, or some combination. They really should play them both, but you have to. Like, if there's a team that you don't want to play, that you if there's a team that you dislike and don't want to play, then you have to play them on the grounds that that, by definition, is a rivalry.
And no canceling a game because the rivalry is too intense, BYU versus Utah.
Right, yes, yeah.
Here, ninth commandment, thou shalt attempt to retain the services of Bill Walton to broadcast every game thou shalt play, because there's nothing greater than Bill Walton talking about things other than basketball during the games.
Right, I mean, he starts conversations in mid-thought. He talks about things that happened long ago in places far away that have nothing to do with the game. It's awesome.
It is. And number 10, of course, the final and 10th commandment does read that thou shalt really not look at instant replay for longer than chapter 30.
Right, which is like violating two of the commandments if it takes more than 30 seconds.
Those are our 10 commandments of college basketball. But I guess on that note, let me run through each of you for any final thoughts on anything we discussed tonight or anything else to do with college basketball. Sleeka, let me start with you.
Chad shouts out to one Monty Python movie. I'm going to shout out to History of the World Part 1, because we really know there were 15 commandments before one of the tablets dropped and knocked it down to 10. Because one of those commandments that actually got broken was that thou shalt have four quarters at all levels of basketball.
No. They're halves.
That would actually be in the commandments had it happened. But so no, John, absolutely not. I disagree. Rocco, let me go to you.
Yeah, I had a couple final thoughts. So one, I would say, it's still very early in the season, so there's some teams right now that are not feeling good about themselves. Like Arizona and Iowa, but it's a long season, and we have to keep in mind that once conference play, that's going to start off another season, and we'll have about four or five teams we're not talking about now as tournament teams that will emerge. So it's a long season. I'm looking forward to enjoying that. And then I would be remiss if I didn't focus a little bit on the week that the Pac-12 had. It was really unbelievable from top to bottom, with Wazoo and ASU at the top, but at the bottom we had Cal get eighth in Maui, Stanford get eighth in the PK80. We had Oregon State barely get seventh. They were losing to Marist for a while in Orlando, and of course Arizona getting eighth in the Bahamas. That was truly remarkable to see all those extreme results.
Absolutely, John T.
I just wanted to give some recognition to the freshman guards this year. There's been eight guards so far who have scored 39 in a game. But in the past 5 days, we've had three of them, and they've all been freshmen. You got Tremont Waters at LSU last Wednesday. You had Colin Sexton against Minnesota on Saturday, playing 3-on-5. And then yesterday, we had Trey Young putting up 43 against Oregon and making 17 of 18 free throws.
Yeah,
I'm used to seeing guards exploding at these tiny mid-major schools against tiny opponents. These were three games by power conference players against power conference opponents, freshmen in November scoring 39 or more a game. I can't wait to see what these guys do once they figure out how to play by the time March rolls around.
Well, David, before I head over to you, I have one other comment. I do want to give a quick shout out to a team from the American Athletic Conference. We thought South Florida was going to be awful this year. They are not as bad as what we have seen out of East Carolina so far.
Every year,
we give an award to the worst team in college basketball. We call it the Centenary Award. Last year, a finalist for that award was North Carolina A&T. Over the weekend, East Carolina lost at home by 6 points to North Carolina A&T. To add to losses they already have to Radford and Central Connecticut, also both at home. This has been a pathetically bad season. I know they had some injuries and some player issues, but still, this is going to be an unrealistically bad season by this East Carolina team. And
yeah,
David,
and they might be the worst. They might be the worst non under the radar team. But my final thoughts. First of all, as great as the Phil Knight 80 was, I just don't understand why he gets a tournament and I don't. So what I am doing here, and I'm going to get this on the screen, we are having this year, this morning, this is actually happening. Let me get it up here. Can we see it now? This is hard to do. Okay, we have this March in Brooklyn, the DG 80, the David Griggs 80, and look at who's in this field, March 6th to 10th. We've got Boston College, who's having a good year. Clemson's going to be there. We've got Louisville, who's in the rankings, traditional power. We've got North Carolina, their rivals NC State, Notre Dame, who's having a big year, Syracuse is out to a great start, Duke, Georgia Tech, Miami, who's in the rankings, Virginia. Look at this tournament. It's not 16 teams, it's 15, but this the DG 80, March 6th through 10th in Brooklyn this year.
And best of all, it's not going to be sponsored by the Gazelle Group, right, Puppet?
No, it's not going to be sponsored by the Gazelle Group. Now, one thing that we will need a waiver on is this rule that teams can't be in the same conference.
David, what about the chances of North Carolina and Duke playing in there? Those are schools that are only, what, 8 miles apart? They've never
Yeah, they're about NCAA. 8 miles apart, and they've never met in the NCAA tournament. Maybe they'll meet in the DG 80.
Maybe. There we go, the DG 80 coming up in Brooklyn, New York, March 6th to 10th. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us on behalf of John Tytel, Rocco Miller, John Salica, and David Griggs and his host tournament. I'm Chad Sherwood, and we'll talk to you again real soon.